WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Many victims of violent crime would like to ask their assailants, why did you hurt me? My guest Gary Geiger recently got to ask this question of the man who shot him in 1981. The meeting between Geiger and his assailant, Wayne Blanchard, was held under the auspices of the Victim Offender Mediation Program, which is part of the New York court system. The director of the program, Tom Christian, is also with us. The meeting was held in the Ellensville prison, where Blanchard is serving time for shooting Geiger. Their meeting was videotaped for the HBO documentary Confronting Evil, which debuts tonight. Back in 1981, Geiger was a nationally ranked weightlifter and championship sprinter. He earned his living as the night auditor of a small hotel outside Albany, New York. That's where he was robbed and shot.
It was a tough area, the motel where I worked at, and it was one of the slowest nights that I ever had. And I thought, like most people, that I was immune to violent crime. I was strong, I was fast, and I thought that I could handle anything that came my way. But on the morning of August 13th, around 3 a.m., I never expected what I encountered.
What happened?
We had four young men enter the motel, two of which approached me at the desk. One fanned out to my left, which was our bar area. One fanned out to my right, which is our restaurant area. I was fairly streetwise, and I was a banker 10 years previous to this, so I went through training for robbery. So I knew how to handle one, and I knew that this was going to be a robbery right away. So I knew only to speak when spoken to, and just be polite, and that's exactly what I was.
And yet you were shot.
Yes.
How did they shoot you?
Well, after being beaten about the head with gun butts and fists, told to get on the ground, my glasses were ripped off my face, causing a cut in the inside of my eye. What happened was I was brought into a back room and put on the carpet, thick carpeting. They saw a locked safe, which they thought I could open. The gun was placed in my temple twice and cocked. I tried to tell them in a sincere voice that I didn't have the combination. They hit me in the back of the head, and to knock me out, I pretended I was knocked out. I heard them running away, and I thought that, my God, I'm alive. I made it through. They're gone. I jumped up, and I heard a cannon-like sound coming from my rear.
And that was the shot?
It was the shot,
And yes. Where did it get you?
It hit me in the lower back. It penetrated my lung. It broke two ribs and hit my stomach muscle and stopped. And the bullet is still embedded in my stomach muscle to this day.
Why couldn't they get it out?
It's too deep. They figured they would be in there probably 5 hours or more. They would have cut much of the built-up muscle that I had trained for all those years, and they decided to leave it alone.
So what was the psychological after effect of being shot?
Well, initially, you know, victims of violent crime go through various stages: anger, depression, guilt, denial, and I went through all of them. I was initially very angry, out for vengeance. And at the trials, victims of violent crime have never been a part of our criminal justice system. And I was traumatized and victimized again by going on the stand for 2.5 hours for my offender's trial, and during which I was called names, I was ridiculed. And the incident gained so much publicity that the defendant's attorney actually asked me if I was trying to further my athletic career with the publicity. And the questions that I had for my defendant started formulating at the trial. I even asked the DA if I could sit in a room with him and his attorney and ask him some questions, but of course it was denied because victims have never been part of the criminal process.
Who ridiculed you?
His attorney, the defendant's attorney.
For what?
Well, I think she was trying to grasp at straws, actually. She was trying to break down my testimony that I couldn't identify him, which in the beginning I could not. But because of the traumatic nightmares I was having every night, I started to, after a period of time, seeing my defendants' faces in my nightmares. And actually, we may have set a precedent in this case. We convicted them on my nightmares, ironically, believe it or not.
Has he's admitted to the crime?
Oh, yes. Yes, yeah. He had. He wanted to admit to the crime right there and then, but The district attorney rejected his plea bargain and had me go on the stand for a grueling 2.5 hours and be victimized again, rather than having the victim part of the system and saying, look, he wants to plead guilty. What do you think? If you go on the stand, you're going to be put through extensive cross-examination. If he pleads guilty, he's probably going to get 5 to 7 years. I didn't know that until the mediation last July.
Now, why did you want to participate in this kind of mediation process? Why did you want to meet him 11 years after the crime?
Well, I had questions initially right from the start that I wanted to ask, and over the years, they became haunting questions. Why did you shoot me? Did you indeed try to kill me? Did you think about firing a second shot? And why did the incident get so violent when I was so polite and cooperative? And these questions, these years, burned inside me. It was affecting my life. I was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, which I didn't know about then. I was treating my family, my friends and coworkers, sometimes with disdain, and sometimes if someone would approach me in what I thought was a violent manner, I would react. And it was a defense mechanism because I vowed never to put myself in that position that I was in 11 years ago, being trapped and being defenseless.
In the TV show, which has the documentary segment of your encounter with the person who shot you, Wayne Blanchard, you ask him, why did you do it when I complied? I did everything that you said. And Blanchard said that when he walked back into the room, you had gotten up and he thought that you were going to set off an alarm.
Yes.
And you said to him, but there was no alarm. I couldn't have set off an alarm. Did you believe him when he said that?
I did. He was the lookout. All these years, again, I thought he was the one that had put the gun to my temple, cocked it, and asked for the combination to the safe. And one of the things that we found out, and there was a few surprises in the mediation, I found out that he wasn't the person that put the gun to my temple. He was the lookout. And what he did was, something told him to come back into the room after his cohorts had left to see if I was still knocked out. Well, the exact moment that he walked in, I had jumped up. And no, there was no alarm there. It was an old-style motel, and there was indeed no alarm. I would have hit an alarm right away because I knew what was happening. I knew it was a robbery, so there was no way I was going for an alarm.
So this was a big question for you. Why did you do it when I complied? He gave you an answer. The answer was he thought you were going for an alarm. What did that answer do for you? What did it give you?
Well, it started to release a lot of the anger and the bitterness that I had. Some of my anger was directed at Wayne Blanchard. Some of my anger was directed at the criminal justice system. But it started to create a curative effect in me because he was opening up to me. He wasn't just sitting there with a prison face on. He was starting to converse with me, and the look in his eye, the profuse sweating, told me that this guy is going to tell me everything that I want to know, that I've been waiting to know.
Now, the fact that he told you that he thought you were reaching for an alarm, did that make you think, well, at least there was some logic behind the shooting?
Yes, I think it was an instinctive reaction that he tried to keep me from reaching for an alarm because he thought that they were going to get caught. See, he was out on parole. And he certainly didn't want any trouble because he would have been back in again. He was out on parole for another felony violation.
I have an excerpt of the tape with me that I want to play, the tape of your encounter with the person who shot you. And this is like the real big question, so let me play this excerpt.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me, please, why you shot me?
Okay, like I say, somebody has said, okay, let's get out of here, right? So the running noise you heard must have been us leaving, right? So something told me in my head to go back and check you, right? So when I come back in the room, I found that you were getting up and sort of going to a box on the wall. And I thought that was an alarm that you was running to, all right? And I know that had you had pulled the alarm, it would have hindered our escape. So I called you and I said, hey, and when you turned around, that's when I fired the shot and ran.
Did you try to kill me?
Oh, no. I believe if I had any intentions on actually killing you, that I would have fired more than one shot.
Did you think about firing the second time when I ran toward the door?
I can't remember that part of it because I fired one shot and I turned and I ran.
The motel was old. There was no alarm system. When I jumped up, I was just scared, that's all. I suppose it was just, all I kept saying in my mind was just take what you want and leave. I didn't care. It wasn't my money. I would have helped you out to the car with it. It wasn't mine. They're insured. I was just worried about myself. I just said, just take what you want and go. I had nothing against you.
Gary, what was going through your mind during that part of the conversation?
Well, I was listening to his explanation very carefully, and I think it coincided with what I remember from that night. I don't remember him yelling, hey, but he could have. I was cut. I was dazed. I jumped up and because I thought they had left, and I accepted his explanation. I think everything he said was correct.
Now, Blanchard told you that he was truly sorry for what happened in the motel that night. What did that apology mean to you? What's an apology worth?
Well, I think to the layman that someone might say an apology is kind of trivial, isn't it, after 11 years? But to a victim of a violent crime, an apology can be very, very profound. I went in there. My big goal in that mediation was to get an apology for my family and me. I wasn't going to ask for it. I wasn't going to beg for it. If it came, I wanted it to come from him. And at the most opportune time, there were no props in there. There was no script. He started to apologize sincerely to me and my family. And I started to choke up and I had to compose myself. It was very, very powerful the way he said it.
And you never doubted
No.
the honesty of the apology?
No, because I looked him. See, in the courtroom, when I identified him, I went right up to him. He looked every which way but at me. So eye contact is very, very important. In the mediation, he looked me dead in the eye for 50 minutes. Right in the eye, one-on-one, no cameras, just him and I. And he never took his eyes off me, and that said a lot.
My guest is Gary Geiger. He was shot in 1981, and he recently met his attacker under the auspices of the Victim Offender Mediation Program of the State of New York. Gary, I'm going to bring in Tom Christian, and he's the director of the Community Dispute Resolution Centers Program for the New York Court System. He was your mediator at the mediation. He worked with you at the mediation. Tom, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
When Gary came to you and asked to meet Wayne Blanchard, is that how it worked? Did he come to you?
Yes, he did.
Uh-huh. Did he seem like a good candidate for this kind of mediation program?
Well, that's the first thing that we look for, is why does someone want to sit down with someone who almost killed him? And if it's just for revenge, then what we do is we talk with them and try to help them, but we're not going to take it any further. If it's someone who needs to let go, needs to get information, needs to get answers to their questions, someone who has gone through the bitterness and the anger and the hostility and is at a point where they want to accept the situation, they want to deal with the individual as a human being, then we say this is a candidate for victim offender mediation. And Gary Geiger was that candidate.
Now, what about Wayne Blanchard, who's in prison? Did you have to figure out if he was a good candidate for mediation?
Exactly. We go down to the prison. We sit down with Wayne Blanchard. We sit down with his counselor. We talk to him and try to find some answers. The first thing that Wayne Blanchard said to me is, if this will help Gary Geiger, I will do it. So we knew then that he was a good candidate. We talked with his counselor, talked with him in depth, prepared him for some of the possibilities. And when I came back from the prison, I had Gary sit down again and went over it with him. And we said, we have a go.
What kind of prisoner would you have decided was inappropriate to mediation?
If the person had no remorse, if they took no responsibility, if he would have said, yeah, I was there, but it wasn't me, it was my partner, no, I didn't want to shoot him, no, I didn't shoot him. If he would have said, well, I can't understand why this guy wants to meet with me, but I'll meet with him if he wants to. I don't know what it's going to do, if it's not going to do any good. if there's no sign of remorse, you know, then it's a waste of everybody's time. There was that sign of remorse there. I mean, he admitted to it. He said, I shot him. I'm really sorry. You know, I was young. I was dropped out of school. I was smoking dope. I was drinking beer. I was standing on the corner. They said, let's go make some money. He said, I was stupid. He had buried this within himself, too, the guilt. And he did have Gary Geiger as a faceless person, someone behind a counter who might have turned an alarm in on them. So this was almost like opening up to him that this was a human being that is hurt. This is a human being that you've dealt with. And you have to sit down as one man to another in this particular case and deal with it.
I know I'm probably more cynical than the average person, but do you ever think when you're talking to someone in prison who you're approaching for a possible mediation, that when they show their remorse, that maybe they're just faking it to for a better outcome at their parole hearing or whatever?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things we tell them is that that's not part of the bargain. We're not going to say to your parole hearing people that you've done a good job here and lighten up on him. We will say that he did go through the victim offender mediation, that we felt that he was sincere. So, again, you know, as I say, I've dealt with people in trouble with the law for 30 years. They say you can't con a con. You know, if they try to con me, I usually tell them, look, if that's what you believe, if that's what you think, that's fine. That's your life. I don't believe you. So therefore, I'm not going to pretend. I have trouble with what you're saying. And we confront them directly.
Gary, I have another question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, if they are victimized, afterwards, I mean, you get scared. You wonder, will it happen again? Will it be tonight? Am I safe today? I'm sure you went through a period of being afraid
mm-hmm.
after you were shot. Has that ended? And if so, when did it end?
Oh, I think it's ended. It could happen again. I don't know. I hope it doesn't. For a while, I was looking in my rearview mirror 5 times more than the average person. If I went into a restaurant, I checked the exits and looking over my shoulder, being jittery. See, most victims of violent crime are like that. And many victims of violent crime feel ashamed. They feel guilty. 2 reasons, the trauma that they went through and the trauma that they went through with the criminal justice system makes them feel guilty. And I felt all of that. But I think this is going to be one of the first times on national TV you're going to see a victim of a violent crime tell it like it is.
Gary Geiger's encounter with his assailant, Wayne Blanchard, mediated by Tom Christian, was filmed for the HBO documentary Confronting Evil, which premieres tonight. Gary Geiger has decided to testify on Wayne Blanchard's behalf at his parole hearing next year. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.